joining me now is someone I first heard speak when I was 12 years old at the Lake Johanna Shores Bible Conference. And years later, as an adult, when I was hosting Worldview Weekends all around the country, I invited him to be a speaker. And so what a joy it was to get to know him on a personal level. He's been in our studio here in Memphis before and spoken for our conferences, as I said. But he wrote a book 26 years ago, which I urge all of you to get. It is a classic. And if you read it, it's actually more relevant now than it was when it came out 26 years ago. As I've been telling you yesterday and today that he would be on, the book is called Hitler's Cross. And the subtitle is Revealing the Story of How the Cross of Christ Was Used as a Symbol of the Nazi Agenda, Dr. Erwin Lutzer. Dr. Lutzer, welcome to the broadcast. Thank you for joining us.
I'm so glad to be with you again, Brandon, and God bless you. And I'm so thankful for all those people who have tuned in, because I know we're going to be discussing issues that relate to our country. There are lessons that we have to learn. And I think also the center, of course, of my heart and yours is always, how does the church respond to a collapsing culture?
Absolutely. How does the church respond to a collapsing culture? Well, the book is called Hitler's Cross. Why? I mean, if you see the cover, I guess you would understand why it's called Hitler's Cross. I don't know, Logan, if they can see that, the book cover. And in the center of the book, you see the swastika and you see the cross. And here in a moment, I'll show you some black and white photos where there were church conferences held that indeed had the cross and the swastika at these church conferences. Dr. Lutzer, is this why you called the book Hitler's Cross, or was there more than one reason?
You know, Brandon, it's been my privilege to lead sites to the Protestant Reformation in Germany, but also interesting sites regarding World War II. And when I was in a museum in Berlin looking at photos, I saw pictures of the swastika with the cross of Christ in the center. And those swastikas adorned the German churches, both Catholic and Protestant. And standing there, I said, somebody has to write a book on how the church was deceived, what the lessons for us are today in our world. And so that's really where the book was birthed in my heart. I want to say this, I know that you held the book up to the camera, it now has a different cover, but the contents is the same. It's entitled Hitler's Cross, the cross of Christ was used as a symbol of the Nazi agenda. And that's, of course, our discussion tonight.
Logan, were you working in those black and white photos as we were talking yet? Work in those photos that I emailed you will show some of these church denominations and church meetings that were indeed incorporating into their meetings the cross and the swastika. And Dr. Lutzer, it was reading your book when it first came out. Again, this book has been out for 26 years. I highly urge all of you to get a copy. I've promoted it for years. I've quoted from it and given attribution because it is a book that I want so many Americans to read. But it was in your book, Dr. Lutzer, that I learned that the German Christians, as they were called the German Christians, they came together and they dissolved their denominations, many of them, and united under the Reich bishop, handpicked by Adolf Hitler. And in some of these pictures that we're showing on the screen, you'll see that the Nazi director of this new Reich church, Mueller, and you'll see the swastika and the cross. So here they were dissolving their church denominations, uniting together under the leadership of a handpicked man by Hitler to lead this new Reich church. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, indeed. You know, as I mentioned, I have often been in Luther's parish, of course, in Wittenberg, and it's in the castle church, Brandon, where Luther nailed the 95 theses, where Ludwig Mueller was officially installed. And Bonhoeffer was at that meeting and stood at the back of the church and said to a friend, "You have now witnessed the death of the church in Germany." So Bonhoeffer was there with some of his friends handing out leaflets speaking against Ludwig Mueller, who was Hitler's handpicked man. Now, we need to understand that what happened is Hitler had intrusion into the church at the Brown Synod, which took place earlier. And in that synod, the issue was this: there was an Arian clause that said that no one of Jewish blood could indeed fill a pulpit in the churches in Germany. In other words, even a messianic Jewish person who came to saving faith in Christ would be disqualified. And of course, many people, you have men like Niemöller and of course Bonhoeffer, objected to that clause. And that's where you have a church split. You have the German Christians on one side, and then you have the confessing church on the other, because Bonhoeffer said, confess, confess. And he was warning the church that they were being confused regarding the two crosses, the swastika and the cross of Christ. And so right in the very place where Luther preached the cross of Christ, in effect, the swastika was installed as the new flag, as the new cross, if you want to call it that, of the church. And the great lessons, of course, here are very obvious. The intrusion of the state into religion and what happened as a result. Fascinating story, and one that we need to be able to unpack and learn lessons from.
I think it's in your book, Dr. Lutzer, that I see you have some pictures in this book. Oh, here it is right here. Let me hold it up to the camera to see. A Nazi baptism, folks. And what you'll see, I know it might be hard to see here on the camera, but what you'll see there is a Nazi flag in a church, and there is an infant laying at the bottom of that Nazi flag. And you have just had a Nazi baptism, baptizing children in the church inside, right by the Nazi flag. It's right in your own book, Dr. Lutzer.
Exactly. And you know, the problem is this, that when a state becomes powerful, and we could discuss how that happened in Nazi Germany, and we certainly see that happening in America today, where a state overextends itself in a desire to get power, the state begins to intrude into the church and it wants to take over. And there is no space really left for freedom of religion, because the state wants to gobble up all of the freedoms because it insists on its supremacy. To Hitler, the Reich, that is to say the empire, you know, Brandon, I was brought up in a German home, and every morning we as children, we would pray together. Our parents had us get on our knees and recite the Lord's Prayer. And the Lord's Prayer says that we should, Dein Reich komme, your kingdom come. So the word Reich means kingdom or empire. And so to Hitler, the kingdom or the empire was to take total control over people's lives, even to the point of details. And you know, we see that happening even today. We could talk about issues such as the Equality Act and so forth, which obviously wants to supplant the church and freedom of religion. And so, you know, history does repeat itself. Like Woody Allen, I think, said, it has to repeat itself because people don't learn from it the first time around.
Martin Niemöller, he worked, as you've already said, with Bonhoeffer, with the Confessing Church. And of course, Bonhoeffer ended up being hung to death by a piano wire, if I remember correctly. And Martin Niemöller went off to a concentration camp, and I believe he finally was released and survived and died older in age. But was there not a confrontation at a meeting between Martin Niemöller and Adolf Hitler? Do I have that correct?
Oh, this is a fascinating story. Hitler is discovering that he cannot get the church to get on board as quickly as he thought they should. So he meets them in Berlin and he shouts at them and he says, you take care of the church. By the way, Hitler even talked about pastors being able to preach the pure gospel. You see, Hitler didn't mind if people went to church as long as it didn't change their behavior or impact the Reich. So what he said is, you take care of the church, I will take care of the German people. So when it was time to shake hands, Niemöller, choosing his words carefully, said, you said that you would take care of the German church and we were, the German people, and we were only to take care of the church, but we have a larger responsibility to all the German people. Hitler turned away without a word. He was very angry. That night, Niemöller's office was ransacked. And furthermore, by then, Niemöller and Bonhoeffer had begun what was called the Pastors Emergency League, and they had a couple thousand signatures. 2,000 pastors took their signatures off because they felt that Niemöller should not have confronted Hitler that directly. They believed that compromise was still possible. Now, I have to finish this story since you got me off onto Niemöller very quickly. Here he is in prison. He's being accused of abuse of pulpit because he violated the Muzzle Decree. The Muzzle Decree said you cannot criticize the Reich in church, but Niemöller did. So he's in prison. He has to walk under a tunnel in order to get to the courthouse. And of course, he knows he's going to be guilty. But on his way in the tunnel, he begins to hear words bounce back and forth. And the words were, "The name of the Lord is a strong tower. Whoever runs into it is safe," which we, of course, know is a verse from the book of Proverbs. Now, that young guard who got Niemöller and marched him down the path there in the tunnel quoted that scripture to him, and Niemöller said, "He will never know how much he meant to me." But you know, Brandon, I've often thought about that young guard. Obviously, he was brought up in church, that he would know scripture. Isn't it interesting how that even those who are brought up in the church, because of the power of propaganda and what I always refer to as cultural streams, because of the power of a cultural stream, they got caught up in Nazism, and of course, to oppose it, you were vilified, and you were deplatformed, you were considered a dissident, and you might be put to death, so everyone went along. Always remember this, the people of Germany were ordinary people, but what they showed was that when you have a cultural stream with a demonically inclined leader, and what you have is a lot of hatred and a lot of propaganda that I hope we can talk about tonight, even the best of people might go along to save their neck.
Indeed. Dr. Erwin Lutzer is my guest, and his book is called Hitler's Cross. 26 years ago, it came out, just as relevant today, I think actually more so. I do hope you'll go and secure a copy. I get nothing for saying that, but an educated audience and folks educated around the world. And I say around the world because our statistics, R.J. Johnston of Johnston House, who monitors this feed and keeps charge of the graphics and traffic among many other IT duties, has told me that the country that is most represented in our show each evening has largely been Australia. And so how interesting that Australia is interested in what's happening to America, because they understand as goes America, so goes much of the world. But we do know we have people watching from all over the world. We also know that we have a very good viewership while we're streaming pre-recorded programs. But RJ told me today that right before you go on the air, there's a large spike. And then when you go off the air and people are getting ready to go to bed for the evening, it drops back down. And so we are seeing our largest attendance of people when we are live during this show. And I think that's partly because we're bringing you guests like we are tonight that you just won't find anywhere else. And if you do, it'll be for just a few minutes, whereas we're giving him a whole hour. So when I promote his book, I get nothing for it but an educated audience here in America and literally around the world. Dr. Lutzer, on your book, in your book, page 92 of this version, you write, Himmler, this is one of the SS guys, Himmler was faced with the problem of how to take decent German young men and deaden their conscience so that they would be willing to perform ghastly deeds of cruelty. Both Hitler and Himmler believed that each of the SS troops had to perform some deed that violated his conscience and sense of decency. Only when they did what others found to be reprehensible would they break away from their old values. The conscience had to be deadened through these acts of barbarism that would serve the dual purpose of cutting the recruit off from his past ties, his family, and his friends, and of bonding him to his new peers and his leader. The break would be so complete that he would never go back. An act of torture or murder would unite him with blood brothers who had crossed the same line, felt the same numbness, and sworn themselves to uphold the same cause. Dr. Lutzer, when I think of that, and the program we had on before you, an hour before you, where they are literally hiring a guy tied back to communist groups, Antifa, Black Lives Matter groups, to literally, appointed by the Secretary of Defense in his own letter dated April 9th, 2021, to purge the military of domestic extremists. And then you see this man's social media and how they define them, which would be largely people that agree with national sovereignty, borders, Judeo-Christian worldviews. We've had a military stand down that came out February 5th of 2021, where they refused to advance anyone in the military. And when I was given a copy within just literally a day or two of it coming out by someone inside the intelligence community, gave me the PDF. The version I have is specifically for the U.S. Navy. And as I read it on the air, what came through, Dr. Lutzer, is over and over the LGBTQ agenda. And you not only have to accept it, you have to value it. If you speak out against it, you're an extremist. And if anyone found attending these kind of events or rallies that are supporting more conservative Judeo-Christian causes or funding them or donating to them, you're an extremist and you need to go. And so I wonder, Dr. Lutzer, when we start to infiltrate into our military transgenderism, and we now see that even some of our military in the past have made a place for the Wicca religion and witchcraft, I have to wonder if this isn't some of the same thing where we're allowing people in our military to be desensitized. And what could that mean for the future of our country, Dr. Lutzer?
Well, you know, Brandon, you've actually raised a number of questions, so I'm going to just respond to a couple of things that you raised. One of them has to do with the difference between nationalism and patriotism. Nationalism is what happened in Germany, where people were so committed to Germany that they believed that whatever was good for Germany was good for Christianity. So there was that identification, as if to say that the state has an equal place in their minds and heart with God. Now, there are in America a few nationalists, that's true. But the point is that, unfortunately, those who are patriotic are also painted as nationalists. So if you, honor the 4th of July, if you believe that our players should stand in honor of the flag, well, then you're a nationalist. And that, of course, is wrong. There's a big difference between nationalism, which I condemn in the book that you are referencing tonight. There's a big difference in that and patriotism, where we honor the values that made America free, and we're certainly not perfect, but who gave us the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and so forth. Now, that's one of the issues you raised, but you raised another one. And that has to do with the celebrating the LGBTQ community and its values. A school teacher here in Chicago told me that he was told, he teaches in the public school here, he was told it is not enough for you to simply tolerate same-sex marriage. If you don't celebrate it, you might lose your job. So when the Bible says, it's very important, when the Bible says that not only do they take evil and call it good, only half of their job is done. The other half is that good must be called evil before the revolution is really complete. And yes, indeed, what we are doing is seeing a transformation of our country. And really, as I mentioned earlier, the culture is collapsing around us. And Brannon, for all those Christians out there, I want them to know that there is no place for them to hide. In one way or another, the pressure is building that we either submit or else we'll be stand out and we will be vilified and there will be collective demonization. I'd love to talk about that, by the way. I'd love to talk about Hitler's view of propaganda. I don't know where your questions are leading you.
But I'll tell you what, it leads right well, because here was the next paragraph from your book that sets this up. You write, the Nazis proved that ordinary people, if controlled with rigid discipline and the power of mass psychology, can be induced to carry out the most brutal and destructive crime the human mind can devise. Researchers have concluded that Hitler's SS troops were no different psychologically from the rest of humanity. George Krenn and Leon Rappaport write, quote, our judgment is that the overwhelming majority of the SS men, leaders, as well as rank and file, would have easily passed all the psychiatric test or psychiatric test ordinarily given to Army recruits or Kansas City policemen, end quote. I think that sets you up nicely, don't you, Dr. Lutzer, from your own book?
It really does. And let's talk about propaganda and the power of propaganda. The purpose of propaganda is to so shape people's view of reality that even when confronted with a mountain of evidence, they will not change their minds. So what you need in order to have propaganda is a couple of elements. First of all, you have to have a group to hate. There has to be those, and of course, in Nazi Germany, you know, it was the communists first, and then, of course, it was the Jews. So you have to have a group to hate, a group to blame everything on that is wrong with your country, on one hand. Then you need fear if you step out of line. But collective demonization says this, that once Hitler, and of course, this was true in Soviet Russia as well, once a person is deemed a dissident, then what happens is everybody else chimes in. We see that today where, you know, if the All-Star game is moved from Georgia to another state, other businesses, we all want to chime in. We all want to ask the question, am I woke enough to be seen as virtuous? That's the issue on the table. So what you have is this collective power not only to demonize those who step out of line, but then to punish those who won't fit in. And in Germany, there were many young men, for example, I'm sure even in the SS, who had questions and whose conscience troubled them. But standing against the culture, standing against the stream of propaganda was too difficult for them. And let me mention something else about propaganda that we see in America today. What Hitler did is he used language to cover evil, unspeakable crimes. For example, when he starved children, he called it putting them on a low-calorie diet. When he wanted to, kill the Jews and exterminate the Jews, he talked about the cleansing of the land. Have you ever noticed today, for example, when it comes to abortion, nobody says, no politician says, I believe in a mother's right to kill her preborn infant. They say, I believe in a woman's right to choose or reproductive rights. And by the way, while I'm on the subject of language, and I discuss this more in a more recent book I've written entitled, We Will Not Be Silenced, this idea of pronouns, you know, you don't know whether or not it's a him or a her or a they or whatever. All of that also is intended to confuse us. So people are terrified because if you go out there and you say something, you might be called a racist, you might be called a bigot, whatever. And so people just simply are silent. And the reason I wrote that book, We Will Not Be Silenced, is because I believe that the church is being shamed into silence. I believe that there are Christians in our universities today who are not talked out of their faith, but they are mocked out of their faith. And we need to be able to teach them to stay strong and the tremendous price that has to be paid for faithfulness. If I don't get to say this on the show, I'd feel very badly, so I'm going to say it right now. We do not need freedom of religion to be faithful. Proof of that, just ask the martyrs. They didn't have freedom of religion, and yet they were faithful to the very end. Mm. And we're not quite there yet in America, but the point to be made is, let us consider vilification for the cause of Christ as a badge of honor.
Amen. Dr. Lutzer, there are so many things I want to talk to you about, and I know the time will get away from us, but we will endeavor to cover as much as we can. but I would invite the audience once again to write it down. Hitler's Cross by Dr. Erwin Lutzer. For many, many years, he was the senior pastor at the very historic Moody Church, not to be confused with Moody College or Moody Bible Institute that some may know, but a separate organization, separate group, although they did have some relationship. It was a different and separate organization, and it was called Moody Church, very historic church. And he was the senior pastor and teaching pastor for many, many years. He still has a daily Bible teaching program that is heard on radio stations all throughout America. And we carry it at our website at worldviewradio.com. So if you like what you're hearing, you say, boy, I wish I had a pastor. Because we know a lot of the pastors today have gone soft, haven't they? And if you say, well, I'd love to have this guy as my pastor. Well, in one sense, you can enjoy his Bible teaching and call him your pastor if you'd like. And he will shepherd you through the scriptures. And you'll find his daily show there at on my website at worldviewradio.com. But his book is called Hitler's Cross. Now, your other book, real quick, Dr. Lutzer, that's just come out, what is that called?
It's called We Will Not Be Silenced. And I wrote that book when I began to realize that the radical left in America does not believe that America can be fixed. It has to be destroyed and rebuilt. And on the other side of the revolution, you'll have an end of white supremacy, you'll have an end of income inequality, and the end of racism, and so forth. And so very quickly, I take this, it's known as cultural Marxism, I apply it to race. Brennan, people have to understand all of the racial conflict and the accusations is intentional. This goes back to Saul Alinsky. The whole point is to keep them in perpetual conflict with the hope, of course, Marxist hope, that the oppressed will eventually overcome the oppressors. And very quickly, the Church of Jesus Christ has to step to the plate here because we have an answer. We say that the differences between us aren't that great. We're all sinners. We're all created in the image of God. We come together. We receive the forgiveness of Christ. And then we ask the question, what does faithfulness mean in a nation that has lost its way? How can we make things better? In other words, critical race theory, which I discuss in We Will Not Be Silenced, is always tearing apart what Jesus died to bring together. And then I apply it to freedom of speech. I apply it to socialism, of course, and the destruction of the family, which is so important to Marxism.
Absolutely. I highly recommend that book, We Will Not Be Silenced. Dr. Lutzer, you know, we had on Monday of this week come out a letter that greatly encouraged many of us. I believe the work that we have been doing with Mike Lindell and Mary Fanning and others and the documentation of what we've been doing has helped along the way. And now we have seen some of those guys watching what's happening and seeing the documentation, and some of those guys I'm referring to are 120 flag officers, 120 generals, admirals. Now, as of last night, it's up to 135. And they've written a letter, and we won't get into the politics of that because I want to stay on this topic, but they've written a letter talking about our country is about to fall over into Marxism, among other topics. And I am so pleased that those generals and admirals have come forward to write that letter and warn about our nation falling over into Marxism, just as you're warning. But, Dr. Lutzer, I would have been much more pleased if it had been 120 pastors that beat them to the punch and wrote a letter much like your book, We Will Not Be Silenced, and put out a letter, a position paper, and signed it. And so my question is, why do we not see more pastors leading the way when we have to see the generals doing this? Now, I think there are, of course, church government and family government and civil government, and they obviously can speak to the issue of more public policy and politics and government, but the pastors certainly can have a Judeo-Christian worldview on the three spheres that God created, family government, church government, and civil government, working in harmony together. I'm just disappointed it wasn't 120 well-distinguished pastors or theologians that wrote such a letter first, but the generals. I'm glad for the generals, but I want to see the pastors. What can we learn from what Germany did in their pastors and what's happening today?
Well, first of all, let me say, as a pastor, I understand the dilemma. We don't want to put up unnecessary barriers to the gospel. I, for example, never endorsed a political candidate or a political party, but I did speak to the issues, whether or not it was transgenderism or same-sex marriage or cultural streams. I think that's the responsibility of the pastor to preach to those issues and to be very clear about where he stands. But now, you related this to Nazi Germany, and this is so fascinating. Okay, here you have the German Christians who are totally liberal. They are totally in Hitler's camp. He chooses their leader, Ludwig Mueller. We talked about that earlier. You have the Confessing Church. The Confessing Church, which was begun by Bonhoeffer and also Karl Barth, men like, the man we were talking about earlier.
Martin Niemöller.
They began the Confessing Church. So here you have two churches, both saying that they went back to Martin Luther, and of course the German Christians were way out there. I won't even begin to tell you what they believed. It was so absurd. But you have the Confessing Church, which wanted to confess that Jesus was Lord and that the Bible was supreme. It was really evangelical. And they began to have their own synods. And these synods would take a stand. But here was the break point. When Hitler asked the pastors of Germany to swear personal allegiance to him, because of what the Bible says in Romans chapter 13 about the fact that we should be submissive to the higher powers, because of that, the synod did not take a stand. They said that's up to the individual pastor's conscience. Well, Hitler loved it. Then, of course, he could simply find those pastors who weren't willing to take the oath of allegiance and throw them into concentration camps, and he could very easily get rid of them. If the confess, and Bonhoeffer, by the way, was just totally devastated by this because the church did not stand with solidarity against Hitler. Now, having said all that, we are so critical of the church in Nazi Germany, but as I point out in my book, the fact is that the German church was the only resistance that Hitler had. Einstein said, I used to criticize the church, but now I speak of it very highly. Why? Because he said, when Hitler came, I looked to the universities, those great bastions of freedom, thinking they would stand against him. They were silent. He said, I looked to the media with all of its emphasis on freedom and its flaming emphasis on we need to be free. He said, they too were dumb. They said nothing. He said, only the church stood across Hitler's path. Now, obviously, we've talked about how the church succumbed to Hitler. And I think sometimes we don't give adequate priority to those who actually stood against Hitler. 700 pastors and priests went to prison. I remember being in Buchenwald, that concentration camp. And Brannon, I don't know if you've been there, but you walk through all of these ancient places of different cells. And it's not just, you know, we think of Bonhoeffer, of course, because he became famous. But here you have the names of all kinds of unknown pastors that you and I have never heard about. They died too. So, you know, Einstein's point was that the church was the only resistance that Hitler had. Everybody else, collective demonization, fell in line because it was either submit or else. So I want to encourage individuals. You know, sometimes people say, well, I attend a church that doesn't deal with these issues and so forth. And that may be. But you as an individual, I say to everyone listening today, you have to ask yourself, what does faithfulness look like for me? You may be a business person. Are you going to write a bogus letter apologizing for the fact that you were born white? That's a line that I don't think you should cross, but are you willing to pay the consequences? If you're a teacher, are you going to live with dishonesty? A teacher here in Chicago said, here's this boy that's born Bert, because he's a boy, he comes to school, he calls himself Bertha because he identifies as a girl. And then the principal says, when his parents come for a teacher-parent connection meeting, don't you dare tell his parents that in school he's a girl. So this Christian teacher says, can I live with this kind of deception? I don't think so. So until people become so fed up with what is happening, with critical race theory, with the sexualization of our children, and the fact that they are being sexualized in every possible way from the earliest grades, until that happens, and there is tremendous pushback, we're gonna find that people are just intimidated, and they will be silenced.
Mm-hmm. Well, I sure appreciate that confessing church, the one that Albert Einstein was referring to, that stood squarely across the path of Hitler. But as you said, there was like 700 pastors thrown into these concentration camps out of thousands who went along. And so we often have to remember it's a small group that will not conform. And you say in your book that they had the choice, because of the dividing of their worldview between the secular and the sacred. They had been taught to divide their worldview between the secular and the sacred. You say the German Christians justified this with a perverted interpretation of Romans chapter 13. And you said that they believe that my spiritual duty is to God and my political duty is to the state, and never shall the two meet. And that seems to be going on with a lot of pastors and Christians today, because of the interpretation of Romans 13 that you've already cited, that says that we are to submit to all governing authorities, and to do no other is to dishonor and not submit to God, to disobey God. But you so clearly lay out in your book, Hitler's Cross, that this is not an endorsement of every government that comes along, but a template, as the passage says, that government is to reward the righteous and punish the wicked. If you do not want to fear the government, do what is right and just. But if you don't, you should fear the government, because they do not bear the sword in vain, capital punishment. So Romans 13 is really a template. It's not an endorsement of every government that comes along, which is why we see, whether it's Moses, or whether it's the Hebrew children, or whether it's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, or the many that are find their names in the Faith Hall of Fame that disobeyed government, because they must obey God rather than man, as the apostles say, correct?
To put it very clearly, and you've already put it clearly, but I want to just put a cap on it. If you say that you are going to obey the government no matter what they ask you to do, you are putting the government in the place of God. Only God, through his word, tells us how we should live. And the government has no right to impinge upon that. And when it does, we have an obligation to say no. But we also then have to take the consequences. We have to live with those consequences. But let us never think that the state can take the place of God. And that's exactly what happens sometimes. There are some naive people, wonderful Christians, by the way. I've had some responding to my latest book, We Will Not Be Silenced, by saying, well, we should always just obey the government. I mean, that's scriptural. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? You know, should Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, should they have bowed? And of course, we see the apostles. We obey God, we don't obey man. We obey man as far as we can, but when we can't, we always go with God.
Well, again, this interview seems to be going very divinely in its direction, because we have not rehearsed this, although we've been friends for many years. We have not rehearsed any questions tonight. You didn't know what I was going to talk about. I didn't know what you were going to say. And yet it seems as though this is all falling well into place, because my next paragraph fits with that. So, you write, was Nazi Germany, which exalted a man in the place of God, just as you said. And so was the church that gave the world the Reformation, then sank into the abyss of human worship. The church simply failed to be the church. You write, in a letter sent to Right to Life supporters, there's a story that I reproduce here in summary form. In a small church on the East Coast, a pastor delivered a sermon on abortion. After the service, a German man who had lived in Nazi Germany told of his experience. Quote, I lived in Germany during the Nazi Holocaust. I considered myself a Christian. We heard stories of what was happening to the Jews, but we tried to distance ourselves from it because what could anyone do to stop it? A railroad track ran behind our small church, and each Sunday morning we could hear the whistle in the distance, and then the whistles were coming over the tracks. Or the wheels, excuse me. We'd hear the whistle in the distance, and then the wheels coming over the tracks. We became disturbed when we heard the cries coming from the train as it passed by. We realized that it was carrying Jews like cattle in the cars. Weeks after week, the whistle would blow. We dreaded to hear the sound of those wheels because we knew that we would hear the cries of the Jews en route to the death camp. The screams tormented us. We knew the time the train was coming, and when we heard the whistle blow, we began singing hymns. By the time the train came past our church, we were singing to the top of our voices. If we heard the screams, we sang more loudly, and soon we heard them no more. Years have passed, and no one talks about it anymore, but I still hear that train whistle in my sleep. God forgive me. Forgive all of us who called ourselves Christians, yet did nothing to intervene. End quote. Dr. Lutzer, I was talking to a man yesterday whose job for over 26 years has been to book well-known national figures and some not so well-known on media outlets, radio and television all over this country. He said to me yesterday as a Christian that he has been told by major conservative news, so-called conservative news outlets, two topics we don't want you booking guests for our broadcast. Those that talk about the right to life or abortion, and those that talk about Israel. I find it very interesting that we read this story tonight because it seems as though our country has decided they don't want to talk about two issues that in many ways go back to what was going on in Germany.
Yes, well, let's begin with the situation in Israel. Of course, what's very important to realize is this. There has been such a stream of propaganda here in the West regarding the Palestinian-Israeli situation that it is truly amazing that you have people even in government today who are not standing with Israel or very lamely standing with Israel or actually against Israel in favor of the Palestinians. And that's a whole separate topic because we have to understand that Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East. We have been friends with Israel. Of course, many of us believe that God gave Israel the land, and I realize that that is not a universally shared with all Christians. But the simple point is this: we need to understand what is going on. And many of us believe, and I think you do too, Brannon, that in the end, God certainly is going to restore Israel, that there still is a future for Israel, and God is going to fulfill many of the covenants that he even made with Abraham, which have never been fully fulfilled. And that indeed is still going to happen. With regard to the issue of abortion, if that's the other issue that you mentioned, it's absolutely yes. I mean, obviously, everyone knows that abortion is killing preborn infants. There's nobody out there that doesn't know that. But because of the sexual revolution and the desire to be able to have sex without any consequences, we of course find ourselves in this kind of a situation. I guess what I'm thinking of is this, that we have to understand what is going on in our culture, and whatever platform God has given us, and you talked about the media, and your media especially, of course, is not afraid of any issues. But what we have to do is to ask ourselves the question, what impact can I have? Because everyone listening today has to answer that question differently. We have to stand where God has planted us, and we have to stand for that which is right. Brannon, you have to have me on again, because I was hoping we'd have an opportunity to talk about such things as the burning of the Reichstag.
Oh, I want to. Well, we started 6 minutes late, so we have until 9:06 if you can go with us. So let's go right into it. Let's talk about the burning of the Reichstag, because I think that's kind of appropriate for January 6th. I don't know if you're going to make that comparison or not, or if I'm wrong to do it, but I feel very much like what happened January 6th was very similar to Hitler burning his own Reichstag and then blaming it on his enemies.
Exactly. You know, I've been, by the way, in that Reichstag building a number of times. Today it's more like a museum and so forth. But when it was burned, Hitler, of course, declared basically martial law. And here's the deal he made with the German people. He blamed it on the communists when actually it was a man by the name of Martin van der Lubbe who went into the basement of the building where there were these big boilers and he set them on fire. But here's the point. Hitler made a deal with the German people and said this, I will keep you safe as long as you give me your freedoms. So I'll take away freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, we'll take away those freedoms, but in return, I will give you safety. Maybe most of your listeners don't know who Louis Long, I think that was his name. He was a congressman many years ago. Attributed to him is this statement, if America falls into fascism, it will do so under the guise of fighting fascism. So what you have today is a situation in which, yes, indeed, January 6th, we will keep this capital with all of these guards and all of these soldiers because it is a permission slip. It's a permission slip for us to go after the dissenters. And the real threat in America is, of course, the white supremacists and those who collaborate with them. Obviously, what happened January 6th was terrible. There were thugs that were involved. There were supposedly Christian nationalists involved. But now everybody is painted with that brush. Remember, I think it was even the atheist who made the statement, and now I'm talking about, the atheists in Nazi Germany. He said that it's very important to realize that power can only be grabbed when you have enemies. So what everybody needs is an enemy, and then you need, of course, I was talking about Nietzsche, his name just escaped me for a moment, that power is accumulated when you have enemies. And so if you don't have an enemy, you'd better make one because this will give you the ability to consolidate power. And I think we see that kind of thing going on today.
I'm glad you brought up Friedrich Nietzsche, considered one of the founders of postmodern thought, who, of course, is most famously quoted as saying that God is dead. Not only is he dead, but we can smell his rotting corpse. We have killed God, and killing God in the conscience of man was his goal. And, of course, we know that Hitler liked to read Nietzsche, I have a picture of Hitler staring at a bust of Nietzsche. He liked Nietzsche. It is said that he gave some of the writings of Nietzsche to Mussolini. Nietzsche, of course, greatly influenced the Frankfurt School, the Marxist Frankfurt School, who came to America around 1933, along with, of course, their great respect for Karl Marx and George Hegel and Sigmund Freud. And, of course, really what they're doing today with all this cultural Marxism and critical race theory is merging Karl Marx with Sigmund Freud, bringing the psychology where everyone is crazy unless you don't believe in absolute truth. Of course, Sigmund Freud believed that, you know, the truly sane individuals were those acting out their natural inclinations of lust, cannibalism, and killing. And the ones who went crazy are the Christians who suppressed their natural inclinations have gone crazy, and thus the Christians are crazy. And now we have the American Psychological Association last year declaring that toxic masculinity is a mental disorder. So now, if you like John Wayne and like Ronald Reagan and follow America's founding fathers, you know, these masculine guys defending truth, a patriarchal society, you're either a fascist, as Theodore Adorno with the Frankfurt School said in his 1950 book, Authoritarian Personality. You failed the test. You deserve the ranking of F for fascist. And you also have a psychological mental disorder, the merging of Marx with psychology, Freud with Marx. And so what we have today is the weaponizing of psychology. We're going to now call people white supremacists who really are just Christians. And we go back to the 1974 manifesto by the Weather Underground, Bill Ayers, coming right out of your neighborhood there, close by in Chicago. Bill Ayers and these guys, Bernadine Dorn, writing their manifesto in 74, Prairie Fire, who over and over in 74 were talking about white supremacy, and the imperialist nation of America. Well, what they meant was capitalist. And they go on to praise, you know, to praise Mao, Chairman Mao, and they're going to praise the Palestinians and the PLO and the Black Panthers. And so this is not new. It's just I don't think Americans realize the psychological propaganda that's being put on them to now classify anyone that believes in right and wrong, good and evil, the Bible, a Christian worldview. They now are going to be demonized with all kinds of names, as you've already stated, like, you know, white supremacy, other things. But do most Christians even understand this, Dr. Lutzer? Or are they so busy listening to, Christian music that's, 7-11, seven words repeated 11 times? Is anyone waking up the church, I guess is my question. What do you see happening going forward? If the church, the true church, is to lead the way, what do you say is our current score on a scale of 1 to 10?
Well, that's a very difficult one to answer, but I do want to say with regard to psychology, isn't it interesting that anything people don't agree with, they call you phobia.
Right.
So, you're a homophobic, you're an Islamophobic, you're a this phobic. So what it's really saying is you have no rational basis for your belief. It is just that you are simply a bigot. Thank you very much. And, it's a phobia that you ought to go to a psychiatrist to get over. So the issue is no longer truth. I realize that this discussion, I'm sure, is coming near an end, though I don't see a clock.
About 6 minutes. We got about 6 minutes. Let me.
Here's what I want to say, though.
All right.
This is very important. The Church of Jesus Christ in America is going to have to realize that the church wasn't built on the American Constitution, though it is a remarkable document. It was built upon Jesus Christ. And when Jesus said, upon this rock I will build my church, there at Caesarea Philippi, he was standing in a place that was the citadel of pagan religion. Those who have been there, you see the caves where the god Pan and other gods were. And what we're going to have to learn is lessons that the church has always had to learn throughout 2,000 years of church history. That the church is an island of righteousness in a sea of paganism, and it has to maintain that righteousness even as it reaches out to the culture. It always has a redemptive mindset, so you're always interested in showing people that we actually have a redeemer who is able to redeem us, who says, come, all ye who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. And even tonight, listening today, there could be somebody who is weary, heavy laden, full of guilt, not knowing where to turn. It is Jesus who offers us that invitation. So to be faithful to that and not succumb to the right or to the left, but nonetheless to speak to the issues with a sense of humility and authority, that is our responsibility of the church. And God has equipped us for this. If we only woke up and realized it, because Jesus Christ himself passed this way before, he was willing to be faithful to God, even the death of the cross. And of course, at the end, we find out that he was raised from the dead and taken to heaven. So we are really on the winning side when you stop to think of it. But what we have to do is to realize that God has brought us to this moment, and it's our privilege to be faithful despite the pushback. Mm.
You write this in your book, Hitler's Cross. So there you have it. The majority of the people, including the professing Christians, no longer believed that Christianity was worth suffering for, much less dying for. They were willing to substitute Mein Kampf for the Bible in exchange for jobs and the greater glory of Germany. Yet those who saved their lives lost them, and those who lost their lives saved them. You also go on to write, several pages over, finally, most martyrs believe that to remain silent is to comply with the enemy. They would agree with Abraham Lincoln that said, quote, silence makes cowards out of the best of men, end quote. This cowardice, martyrs affirm, is exactly what they labored to overcome. Even when given the option of silence, they are so overwhelmed by the greatness of the cause that they speak out or act as emissaries of justice. You go on also to speak about the issue of the Holocaust and the various groups. And then you say the majority sought refuge in neutrality. They could be neutral. Dr. Lutzer, I've been speaking quite a bit as we come to our remaining 3 minutes about the twins of apathy and passivity. And that's really what you're speaking about when you think that people say they can be neutral. You cannot be neutral on the things of which God has already spoken. I mean, our very constitutional republic, as William Blackstone said, is based on the laws of the divine. What he's ruled on, we cannot rule against. We cannot remain a free society if we think we can hide in neutrality, can we?
No, and as I mentioned earlier, there is no place to hide. You know, if we talked about the present situation here in America, we would soon discover that there are laws and things that are happening that are so pervasive throughout society, where you have all of these theories, whether or not it's, you know, the BLM and their agenda. And by the way, all Black Lives do matter. I agree with that. But unfortunately, the organization that takes that mantra is actually Marxist. But the point is, people are living with these cultural pressures. And no matter where you are going to be found out, and you'll either have to declare yourself, because silence will no longer be an option. Niemöller, when he said goodbye to his church before he went to the concentration camp, said this: the day of meditative Christianity is over. And then he said, he who became a Christian only because he thinks that he might gain something from this world, he will be blown away like the chaff by the wind. So these are exciting times, Brannon, and I hope that we encourage people today to simply take up the badge, to speak, to be faithful, and to take the consequences, and to know that you don't have to win on earth in order to win in heaven.
Mm. Your most recent book is called We Will Not Be Silenced, correct?
Yes.
And this one, folks, is Hitler's Cross, written 26 years ago. I hope you'll secure a copy of both his books, We Will Not Be Silenced and Hitler's Cross. But you've written how many books, Dr. Lutzer? I'm sure you've lost track, right?
I have. I think my staff says it's around 30. I don't know. I've never counted them.
And what is your website?
Well, what people can do in order to know more about this book, or if they want to get the latest book, for example, they can go to MCM Offer. MCM stands for Moody Church Media. MCMOffer, OFFER.com, for a gift of any amount. It will be sent to them. Or they can go to the Moody Church, the Moody Media website, Moody Media, and that's where my sermons are. There are other resources available, blogs that I've written and so forth. It's all out there. And we made this available to the whole church. We received a letter from Africa the other day, from the Congo, saying that people are listening to the messages, they're translating them. And according to this email, some churches have actually begun because of this ministry. Hmm. So we humbly try to move forward and be faithful wherever God has planted us.
Well, and you can also hear him daily, folks, on my website with all the other media folks we carry over there at worldviewradio.com. So Dr. Lutzer, we close with this. After all the atrocities of the Holocaust and all the laws had been changed, there at the Nuremberg trials, one officer after another said they were simply following orders. They broke no laws, and clearly they had not broken any German laws because Hitler had changed the laws. And so they tried to plead innocence by claiming they were following orders and they broke no laws. And how were the prosecutors at the Nuremberg trial to answer that? But I believe you write, as do others, that it was the American prosecutors that said, but there is a law higher than man, the moral law, the moral law. In conclusion tonight, Dr. Lutzer, do we not all stand condemned by the moral law? And if so, what can we do about it?
Well, the only thing to do about it is to flee to Christ, who saves us from the wrath to come. That's why my own heart has always been for the gospel of Jesus Christ, because when we receive Christ, admitting our sin, repenting of that sin, and receiving the gift of salvation that he died to bring us, his righteousness is credited to us. And because of that, we are shielded from God's holy wrath against sin. And if there's somebody listening tonight and you have never done that, do that right now. As the Holy Spirit has worked in your heart, believe on Christ, because he's the only one who can deliver us. And God's judgment is sure, and the only shield against it is what Jesus Christ has done for sinners just like us. Hmm.
I heard him first speak when I was 12 years old in person, and it's been a joy to have him as a speaker and as a friend and a friend of my family and at our dinner table with his lovely wife and as a guest many times, including here tonight. Dr. Lutzer, thank you for your many, many, many years of, well, maybe not so many minis on that one, but your many years of faithfulness and your love for God and country.
Thank you, Brandon, and God bless you.
Dr. Erwin Lutzer, folks, I hope you'll check it out. What a joy to have him on Lindell TV tonight, streaming on the frankspeech.com platform. Well, we look forward to our broadcast tomorrow night, 7 to 9. We'll have a special few guests as well. Then, as well as on Sunday night, as we keep moving forward, and who knows, we might be joined at any time by the founder of Lindell TV, Mike Lindell, who once again has hopped on an airplane and couldn't join us tonight because he's busy traveling throughout the country and speaking, but he might join us even yet this weekend. I know he wants to because he called me literally a couple minutes before we went on the air. So tune in tomorrow night. We'll let you know what we have. Hope you're part of that nearly a half a million now on our text alert list that gets a reminder. If not, tomorrow night I'll tell you how you can join. Till next time, I'm Brandon House. Thanks to Logan for helping produce tonight and Dr. Lutzer and Alex Newman for being great guests and for you being great listeners. Till next time, I am Brandon House. Take care.